Welcome to the Impactful CEOs Podcast. My name is Lou Mosca, and I'm the Chief Operating Officer and Executive Vice President here at American Management Services. You know, every owner has their goals for their business, but most don't have a formal plan to make those goals a reality. Since 1986, American Management Services has been working with owners like you, helping them to develop and implement a formal plan that achieves their goals and secures a future for their business. So with a formal plan, owners can thrive in their business's success, creating wealth and opportunities for all. And that's why we've created this podcast, to share the unique plans and strategies business owners have implemented to grow their business. Stick around to the end of the show. We will reveal how you can be our next guest on one of the fastest growing CEO podcasts on the planet in 15 to 20 minutes. Let's get started.
Hello, this is Impactful CEOs, and I'm your host, Jeff Ford. Now, we're here to check in with CEOs who are truly creating an impact in their business, their employees, and their community. Well, today's guest has spent more than 13 years in the landscape industry and has completed over $3 million worth of projects throughout his tenure as president of Hilton Head Landscapes. Please welcome Nick Welliver. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me, Jeff. I appreciate it.
No, we're grateful that you came. Now, tell me a little bit about Hilton Head Landscapes. It sounds like you're in Hilton Head, which is supposed to be amazing. Sure. And I've never been, but everybody tells me it's beautiful and that I should go.
Yep. Beautiful resort community. I think we only have around 50,000 full-time residents and over a million visitors every year. Wow. I started this company about 10 years ago or so. I've been in landscape my whole life. My mother was a landscape architect. So I kind of grew up in a landscape shop, and I actually told myself that I wasn't going to be in landscaping growing up. But, while I was in school at USCB here locally, I just wanted to avoid some student loan debt. So I started this company up during that and started taking off, and I'm really starting to enjoy it. I think it does give a good work-life balance as far as the landscape industry goes. It can be stressful at times, of course. We're fighting Mother Nature, but it also allows us to, spend some time in the office, meet new people, get out there in the field as well. So there's a variety in it. So I am enjoying it. We've been in business for about 10 years now, started in 2010-ish. We do mostly commercial maintenance and high-end residential installation projects. Most of the projects range anywhere from $100,000 projects up to $1 million landscape installs, depending on where they are and what kind of castle the homeowner is building, I guess, sometimes.
Yeah.
But we also do a lot of commercial maintenance. We work closely with the city of Hilton and town of Bluffton and a couple of the other municipalities around here. But I started it, borrowing equipment to get it going. I was working for a landscape company for quite a while and decided to start my own and started it from the ground up, literally borrowing equipment and just going after one contract after another and slowly building it from there. And now we're up to just short of 50 employees. And we're averaging between $3 and $4 million a year over the past couple of years in total revenue.
Wow. That's amazing. So did you grow up in Hilton Head area, or tell me about how you decided to have your business here?
So I guess that has to do with my mother. She moved me down here actually when I was my sophomore year in high school. So I did graduate high school here. I moved away for a little bit after that to go to college. Ended up in Washington, D.C. for about a year and didn't really like the city life. So I decided to move back down here to finish out college and started the company while I was back down here. But I kind of grew up in Raleigh, North Carolina area. At the time, my mother was working for a large landscape corporation, and she was a regional manager opening branches all over the coast of North Carolina and South Carolina. This was one of the branches that she did open. And that's what moved us down here when I was in high school. I really liked the area. When I was in high school, it was a little bit too small for me. I wasn't a big fan of Hilton Head then. But after, traveling a little bit, living in a couple other cities, it really does have a lot to offer. There's, there's the beach, there's lots of golf, there's boating, there's all kinds of things to do here. So when I came back down, I'm, really falling in love with it. And I was surprised that I was able to get the name Hilton Head Landscapes. There's a Hilton Head every other type of service business sure. there is, but for some reason it was available when I went searching for the domain name. So I figured that would be the best name, I guess, for this area. And it's definitely helped out a lot, being that a lot of our clients are absentee homeowners. They live full time in the Northeast or out West, that sort of thing. So it's easy for them to find us, I guess. That was the idea behind the name. I recognize that it kind of limits our area, but there is a ton of work right here on this island and just right over on the mainland. I've worked for some large corporations in the past, and we traveled all over the states to do projects, and the logistics of that became pretty difficult. So when I decided to start out in the landscapes, I wanted to just focus on one local area and be able to cater to our clients here and we just do the premier work in this area without having to worry about expanding too far of a distance, I guess.
Right. And you said your mom worked in the corporate side of this as well, kind of starting these businesses yeah. in different regions. So did she influence your style of leadership, I guess, and when you decided to start your own business?
Yes, absolutely. I will say that I had one of the best mentors ever for owning a landscape business. She started, as a landscape architect and worked her way all the way up to regional management. She ended up buying out the branch that was down here in Hilton Head and starting her own company with some investors. And that went well for a while. I moved back down here to help her with that company. It was called Landcare South. We ended up selling that to a large corporate company in 2008. And then from there, she offered if I wanted to take that over instead of selling the business. And at the time, I was still in school. I didn't really think I wanted to be in landscaping. And I just said, no, I think it'd be best for you to sell it and, you enjoy your retirement, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But looking back, we probably should have just stuck with it because 2-3 years later, I ended up starting my own company.
Sure.
She definitely has influenced me. She had the largest woman-owned business in the whole state of South Carolina in 2008.
Wow.
When we sold it, it was close to a $6 million business.
That's impressive.
So, yeah. I think we're headed that way as well. I'm looking at, I'm more scared of growing too fast than anything right now. It's something that's easy to do in the area. It's a booming area for housing. A lot of people are trying to move down here. So I want to make sure that we grow consistently and correctly and smoothly without getting in over our heads, I guess.
What was the best piece of, leadership advice that she gave you before you took over and started your own business?
I think it kind of applies to almost all businesses, not just landscape, but she really taught me to know when to say yes and how to say no. Mm. There's times that we can't really provide the service that somebody's looking for, or there's some sort of barrier to be able to do so. I mean, we get asked to have humongous trees craned in behind homes and stuff like that. And sometimes it's just physically not possible. And learning how to, end up saying no to a client is important to have them still walk away from the interaction feeling good about it. It's really comes down to tact, I guess. And that's something that's really been important, is knowing when to say yes to an opportunity, but when you have to say no to something, knowing how to do so.
Yeah. So obviously you've got the experience. That's not an issue when you're starting this business on your own. But tell me a little bit about what it was like getting that started. How did you kind of go to market? How did you let people know that this was something that you were doing and set yourself apart?
So I'll be honest, when I first started the company up, I wasn't planning on it being near as big of a business as it is. It was something that me and my friend were doing I just didn't want to take on very much student loan debt. I wanted to make some extra money while I was in school. It could work with my schedule. So, and it's what I knew. I'd been in landscape management for a while. So I started up kind of small and thinking that I was going to go, my degree's in marketing and I have one in business administration as well. But I was planning on working for a marketing firm. And after this kind of took off, I think we were over $1 million before I graduated from college. So I saw that there's definitely a real opportunity here, and I decided to stick with it. And when we first started out, it was just me and my buddy, Welliver and Dunning Landscapes. And we literally went after my neighborhood's contract and we were awarded that and did a great job. And we've been a referral-based business ever since. I actually don't even have Yellow Page ads right now. We do have a website that's set up, but again, it's word of mouth around here. It's a very small island. It's only 13 miles long, the whole island. So word of mouth goes a long way. And reputation is the most important thing to me, just because it's so small in this area.
Yeah.
So it's really been just word of mouth, asking our current clients and our employees to put the word out there. And recently we've started sponsoring quite a few events. We sponsored a home builders association events, chamber of commerce events, stuff like that. So that's starting to help. I'm starting to ramp up our marketing a little bit as well.
Tell me a little bit about your clients, the kind of impact that you've had on your clients.
Well, I really try to develop relationships with them. A common, I guess, our kind of core business is we work with architects for the original installation of some of these very high-end residential homes. But we want to build a long-term relationships. I have clients that have been with me for 15 years through three different companies. They just know that they can count on me, and communication is absolutely key. There's a lot of moving parts happening every day. So just communicating with them and being 100% honest, even when it's something that they don't want to hear. You know, sometimes you just have to be the bearer of bad news, I guess. But being on the level is what it gains trust in our clients. And that's ultimately what it is that we need to have trust in our clients. They don't see us every day, but when we leave, they need to trust that we still have their property in mind and we still care for it. So,
how about your employees? What kind of impact do you have there? Obviously, I know that this is not a job where all the employees are in the building with you all the time and are out. Yeah. They're out there doing jobs. Tell me a little bit about what it's like managing that kind of business.
It can be hectic at times. There's quite a few people. That's probably been one of the most difficult things for me. I went to school for business and I understand, you know, bookkeeping and P&Ls and statements and all that kind of stuff. But the personnel is something that will always be a challenging part of the business just because there's so many people going to so many different sites every day. It becomes chaotic at times, but I really rely on having, employees that have stuck with me for a very long time. We treat them very fairly. I think we pay higher than most in the industry. And anything they need, they know that they can come to us and I'll be happy to help with them. Like I said, clients as well as employees, we have some employees here that have been with me at multiple different companies for 15 to 20 years since I started in it. So it's really just developing a relationship with them and knowing that, you know, management has their back and will come to their defense if ever necessary, and we'll help them in any way that we can. That's been able to build a really good culture here. I brought a couple of new managers in recently, and I know everybody talks about team building. Every company talks about it. It's hard to actually accomplish, and it was very gratifying recently to hear from some of the new managers that came into the business to really recognize the culture that I've been able to build here, that people enjoy coming to work. That was one of my key things when I wanted to start the business. I had worked for some companies that I didn't enjoy going to work. So, you just know you're going to get chewed out or something in the morning. You don't look forward to going to it. I didn't want that to be the case for Elgin Landscape. So I really try to instill that culture in everybody that if people need time off for their family, absolutely, we give it to them. We just ask for a little bit of advance and we'll find somebody to fill that shift. But we're very flexible, I guess, as a business, and that helps add to the benefits, the non-monetary benefits, I guess, of working at Elgin Landscapes.
Yeah. Looking back over the years, what can you point to that you would say is one of the best things that you did in your business to kind of really drive profit growth?
Most recently, about 2 years ago, I invested in a software, a CRM software and project estimating software that has been leaps and bounds for us, just keeping us organized. We were averaging, I think, 600 projects a year or so. And once we put this software in, it's just become so much more efficient and easier to track profitability on everything. I've noticed our profits increase at least 10% with the exact same book of work. We've also increased the amount of work that we've been able to do. The acceptance level of the proposals has gone way up. I think we're on proposal number 600 already this year. So we're on track to put out 100% more projects than we have in the past.
Wow.
Well, I say passed as in 2019 because 2020 was tough for all of us.
Sure.
But we did maintain. We were able to work all the way through 2020. We were fortunate for that. But it was kind of flatlined as far as, you know, new projects go.
Yeah. So,
but 2019 was great, and we are right back on track to have our biggest year ever. So.
Yeah. I was going to ask, how did the pandemic affect you? I mean, it's an outdoor job. A lot of times they're wearing masks anyway.
Yes, exactly.
They're doing stuff. So did it still sort of, I guess, taper off for you, or was it pretty much business as usual for you guys?
It was pretty much business as usual for us. And luckily we have all the PPE stuff. So when the whole world was fighting for face masks, that sort of thing, I already had cases of them sitting in our storage closet. So
sure.
We were okay. We could continue to operate. When it first came out, of course, everybody was a little bit scared about it. So we had to obviously put in all the procedures, make sure everybody was safe. But we work in 2 to max 4-man crews anyways. So for all the employees, there's not really a time that there's a lot of people gathering together. Mm-hmm. And even then, it was just we had to kind of worry about when they were in the trucks between sites. Because once they get onto a site, they were able to split up and you know, maintain a distance, obviously. But you know, we have some commercial clients, shopping centers that had to shut down. So we had, you know, we gave some concessions there and had to, you know, decrease our maintenance visits, and that affected our revenue a little bit. But I think we had about a 20% or so less for 2020, which is not as bad as a lot. So it affected us, but we were able to keep everybody working. And that's what was important to me, is keep the team together. That's what I focused for the whole year, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, we were considered an essential business, so we continued to work every day that we were able to. So.
That's great. So tell me a little bit about what, now that that's passed and, you know, we can start looking towards the future, things getting back to normal a little bit. Hopefully some of these stores and things that you were describing are opening back up again.
Yeah.
What is the future, the next few years look like for Hilton Head Landscapes? What are you excited about for the future?
I'm excited about some of the projects that really we already have on the books. I'm a little scared. We definitely need to do some hiring and purchasing of equipment. But recently in 2021, we've landed the largest commercial project on Hilton Head and the largest residential project on Hilton Head. Both of them are about $500,000 projects each. So those are going to be very exciting. They're going to be showpiece projects for us. So I think it'll really help us out going forward as well, being able to showcase the level of quality that we're capable of. So as well as there's many, many others that we do have on the books. And then also hoping to grow our commercial maintenance division a little bit. Maintenance is a necessary part of the business. It's a little more difficult, but it is a necessary part. So we're going to have some targets there, and I'm looking to hire in a couple managers as well to try and get us there on the commercial maintenance side. The construction side is what I started in, and that's my true core talent. I've tried to build my team around me on things that I'm not as good at. But the construction is what excites me. It's what gets me up in the morning. The installation projects, I'm just a kid at heart. I like playing with toys, you know, having cranes on site and putting in big, heavy palm trees and live oaks and all that I get enjoyment out of that. So
that's really cool. So we talked a little bit about what your mom's best advice was for you, but now that you've been doing this yourself for a while as your own business and as a CEO, tell me what would be your advice for someone who might be just getting started. What have you learned that you would like to pass on to others?
I would say don't overcommit. That's the number one thing that I've witnessed other landscape companies come and go during my time here in this area. And 90% of the time, if they didn't make it or decided to close their doors down, it was due because they overcommitted to things and didn't follow through. But they don't want to overpromise and under, you know, deliver. And I've promoted a couple of younger guys that, you know, were crew leaders at one point and just showed the initiative. So I've promoted them into management, and it's worked out great for the most part. And the only really advice that I do push them is just try not to overcommit. Take things slow. I know that sounds weird, but that's how we produce the quality that we do, is to make sure that we have our communication down. We have a plan in place prior to showing up. There's quite a few of our competitors that are just kind of fly by wire, seat of the pants type projects that it ends up becoming frustrating for clients and for the employees. So having a plan in advance, making sure it's slow and just don't overcommit to what we're capable of, I guess.
Yeah. So when you're not doing landscaping or commanding backhoes and cranes and whatnot, what do you like to do in your spare time? Is there like, do you ever want to go somewhere else other than the island? Like, or is there just, because I mean, people come there to do things. Do people who live on the island like to go elsewhere to do things? What do you do?
Yes, absolutely. I take my vacations elsewhere usually because we see the beach every day by default, just being on projects, which is nice to be able to see it, of course. But again, like it's a small island. So when I go on vacation, I like to be a tourist myself, you know, mm-hmm. I like to be a stranger, but my wife and I, we travel quite often. You know, mostly somewhat local. We love Jekyll Island in Georgia and Jack's Beach. Charleston's a great town. On the kind of the side, I've gotten a little bit out of it, but I'm also a high performance driving instructor. Something that I really enjoy is instructing people on racetracks how to drive competitively, I guess. It's not actual racing. I don't compete against anybody, but it's something I really enjoy. I've driven a lot of the tracks in the Southeast, Atlanta, Virginia, Daytona, kind of Miami, kind of all over the place. I did quite a bit of it instructing in 2018, 19, and 2020 kind of shut tracks down. I've gotten back into it a little bit this year. I've only gone two or three times so far this year, but I do really enjoy it. It keeps my mind off of the hectic day of business. You know?
Yeah. That's really cool. How does one get into that? Like how did that start for you as a pastime?
It's actually a client of mine. One of our wealthier clients. I went out to his house. I saw he had a 6 or 7 bay garage at his house, which was unbelievable. And I've always been into cars. I've built a couple cars. I built a little kit car a couple years back. And I didn't even know there was a possibility until I, you know, spoke to Mr. Lewis and asked him about it. And it's something that he did for fun. He had a couple of Porsches and Ferraris, and that really impressed me at a young age. And I asked him how you get into that. And it's actually very easy. You can just go online to one of the instruction schools and you can sign up for it. It's about $300 a day. Wow. So it's pretty simple, and you can bring any car you want out there. It's a nice group of people. It's kind of a family atmosphere. People travel from all over to the track, but everyone feels like they know each other once you get there.
Yeah. Now, do you have a car, a specific car of your own that you take out there?
I do. I was driving, I had a Corvette for a while. I sold the Corvette last year, Corvette C06. And I have a kit car that I built. It's a Lotus 7 replica, 1965 Lotus 7 replica. Looks kind of like a Kazoo. It has open wheels.
Yeah.
It's fun. But, you know, I'm not necessarily an engineer. So it's got its issues still. It's a work in progress as always. But I also have I recently bought one of the new Toyota Supras. It was used, but I was purchasing some pickup trucks for the business, and someone had just traded this car in, and it was a great deal. So a couple months ago, I bought that, and I've been having some fun with that, tinkering on it. Working in the garage, you know, helps me clear my mind. I enjoy it.
Sure.
So, and I think I'll, you know, hold on to that for about a year or so, and then kind of see where I go from there. I think it's a good deal. So that's, keeps me balanced. That's all.
Yeah, sure.
It's therapeutic, I guess, is the easiest way to say it.
I can imagine. What's your dream? What would be your dream car to actually get to drive out there?
My dream car would probably be a Pagani Huayra.
I haven't heard of that.
Seen one of those. Yeah. Mm-mm. It's an Italian car, bespoke car. Horatio Pagani is the architect that built it, or engineer that built it, I guess. But they're really incredible cars, and they're pieces of art. That's what they are.
That's awesome.
The interior has all open linkages for a shifter, and the body is bare carbon fiber. They're extremely expensive. I will never be able to afford one, and probably will never even ride in one. But you ask for a dream car, that's what it is.
No, that's right. So you, it's not necessarily a car that you're planning to get someday, but it's something that you would do.
Yeah, it's. I think they're $2 or $3 million.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
They're incredible cars. There's only, I think, 100 of them made.
Gotcha.
Neither you or I will probably ever even see one in our lifetime. They don't drive on the road very often, but, like I said, I'm a connoisseur, so I've, I read about cars and stuff like that. So
yeah,
that's how I know of it, I guess.
Sure. No, it's good to have the pastimes. You got to have something, right? That kind of takes your mind off all the stuff and the work. And that sounds amazing. Just being able to get cars up to speed on a track like that.
Yeah.
I love playing those kind of video games. I don't know if I could do it in real life, but it is a bucket list item to do that. So that's pretty amazing.
That's what you can do. It. Anybody can. If you a couple hours in a classroom and $300 and you will have a lot of fun. And no matter what car you have, you can take a rental car out there and you'll have a lot of fun.
That's great. That's so awesome.
But yeah, I'm definitely enjoying it. It's kind of an odd hobby, but everybody's got to have some sort of a hobby, I guess.
Yeah. So. Well, before I let you go, I want to make sure you have a chance to tell folks how they can find you, what your website is and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, sure. Our website is www.hiltonheadlandscapes.com. It's the same for basically all of our tags. Our Facebook page is Hilton Head Landscapes. Our Instagram page is Hilton Head Landscapes as well. I think our Facebook page is probably the most up to date. Like I said, we're kind of a small business, and I spend a lot of time, with quality control and running the business. And I really do need to spend some more time on the social media. I think we're considering hiring a social media company later on this year to try and help manage some of that. Most of the stuff on there. I'd say that our Facebook page is probably the most up-to-date of projects that we've done recently. I'd like to encourage people to go to that and check out some of our most recent installations, maintenance, that sort of thing.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for spending the time with me here today. It was great to talk to you. And it sounds like I need to come down there and visit at some point.
Yes, absolutely. Please reach out. We can get you hooked up down here.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Jeff. I appreciate you having me today.
And thank you for listening to another episode of Impactful CEOs. We'll see you next time.
Okay, Lou Mosca here, and thank you so much for listening to the Impactful CEOs podcast. If you're a successful CEO who would like to be on this program, please visit amserv.com/CEO/apply. If you got something out of this interview, would you share this episode on social media? Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone that will be a great guest, tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag #ImpactfulCEOs. I love seeing your posts and guest suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss any episodes, go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show and mean a lot to my team and me. Want to know more? Go to our website, amserv.com, or follow American Management Services on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram @AmServBiz. Listen, thanks for listening. We will see you next time.